1041. I'm Harold Fisher. This is National Crime Victims Rights Week, and we're talking about what happens to you after you've been a victim of crime. My guests are Marilyn Roberts. She is the acting director of the Office for Victims of Crime, that is under the U.S. Department of Justice, and Seminde Lloyd. She is founder of the Women's Wing organization. She's also been a victim of crime, as so many of us have. If you have a question, if you have a comment about the aftermath of being victimized by a criminal, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Leslie, calling from Bowie. Thanks for calling, Leslie. What's on your mind?
Good evening. I have a comment and a question.
Okay.
The comment is that I want to express, as a victim of a property crime, basically my car was stolen while I was in it. You feel like you still violate it. I'm not equating it to any other type of violation, mm-hmm. but as a person where a person actively stole my car, I feel like I'm still violated, and that doesn't go away. So I'm not equating it to anything else, but for me, that's how I felt as a victim of a crime. And the question that goes along with it, how can people of these types of property crimes get any type of justice in terms of how the insurance company or other parties can fully replace what was lost to you?
Well, before I even have them answer that, let me first say, Leslie, that, you know, certainly because it happened to you, it's still important. And certainly, yeah, there are more severe crimes and there are lesser crimes. But that's why we're doing the program, because it did happen to you. You still feel violated, and it is no less important specifically because it happened to you. So let's put that out there. But to her point, so she lost her car, and certainly she was insured, as she is suggesting. But what more can be done as far as compensation or help with replacing property that she has lost?
That has to do with her insurance company. If she had insurance, mm-hmm. The insurance company is responsible to replace the car or do an investigation. For property in a car, it depends on what kind of insurance she has. They will either replace the property in a car. If she doesn't have insurance that covers her property, she should then, they will advise you to have property insurance. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have that, unfortunately, is a loss.
Mm-hmm. Ms. Roberts, talk to me a little bit more about it, because I think a lot of people are not 100% clear on how much assistance is offered from your office, even if it's trickled down to victims assistance organizations in the states.
As I said before, the compensation reimbursements vary from state to state, and I'm going to be honest and say I don't know if property loss is ever a part of what can be compensated. I don't think it is. It is for more about services to the victim. I would be surprised if property loss was part of it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Real quick, Leslie, what happened in the end? When did this happen? And, you know, you said your car was stolen while you were in it. It sounds to me as if you were a victim of a carjacking.
Well, because, and this is the thing about it, I was getting out the car to fix something in the back, basically, and when I was getting out the car to fix it, that was basically, as the police said, they were scoping me out.
Right, so you got out and they got in and took your car.
Right.
Okay.
And the deal about it, is that sometimes you're being made to feel that you're the criminal. Mm-hmm. You did something wrong. And I try to express to the police officer that when you have property and you own that property, nobody has a right to steal it no matter what you do, as long as you're not acting carelessly. Mm-hmm. And at times, I was made to feel the victim. I mean, like I did something wrong, that I put myself at risk.
So what happened? Did you ever get your car back, or what was the outcome?
Fortunately, I have a good story in that because of the snowstorm, my car was recovered, but it was, as I could put it, it was an old family car that it was very good use, newly renovated, but because of the age,
it was damaged.
Recover anything back from it, even though we invested a lot of money into it, and that's why I feel that you're violated again.
Okay.
Because age is the value of the vehicle is more important than the actual worth of it.
Okay. Well, Leslie, thank you so much for sharing with me. I appreciate that. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Bernice, calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes. Mine was pretty much an incident that happened where I was hit by an off-duty police officer. And... Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Now, when you say when you say hit, do you mean
I was driving and he ran a light?
Okay, so this was a car or vehicle incident.
Yes.
Okay, go right ahead, please.
Okay, and because he was an officer, after the incident, because I was taken to the hospital myself and the passenger. Everything was left in my car, so whoever had asked us or whoever came and got the car, you know, got everything. And we couldn't get out of the car until the people came and got us out.
Mm-hmm.
And he never once came over. And he was just on his phone, but I could see him standing there talking on the phone. And finally, a few minutes later, a lady came up. And she said that she was just somebody that saw the accident, but she didn't explain that she was his girlfriend.
Well, Bernice, let me stop you here because these stories can get a little involved. What's your question?
Okay, and here's a question. It's a comment I want to make and just say that when we are here, I mean, when someone is in a status of that particular incident, and we never get the information about that person, and they get all our information. I was harassed and everything, even after the accident. Even though they did this, his insurance did pay for my vehicle to be repaired, and I decided not to take the vehicle because of the airframe was bent. They got angry with me and just really harassed me for almost a year later.
I see.
And that was my thing in terms of how do you deal with it? And I guess I'm still a little sensitive about it. It's been some years, but
yeah.
I'm just still kind of sensitive about it.
Well, let me speak to my panel about it. Obviously, when you are having an issue with a person in authority, that really kind of changes the dynamic. Is there legal assistance? Is there another kind of support that comes from your office that can help in situations like this?
I can say that much is needed. We have done some listening to people in the field about where the gaps are in providing services for victims, and legal services is one of them. And we have been supporting some services around the country, but they are by no means covering the waterfront of what is needed. I think there's much more needed in the way of making legal services readily available to people who need them, who've been crime victims.
But are there some legal services available?
There are. They are sometimes, I don't know if there are some available in this area that are available for free, so you can probably speak better to that.
Not in a situation with accidents, and especially for what she explained with a police officer. When a police officer comes on the scene on fortunately, and finds out that the other person is a police officer, like she stated, it becomes a different dynamic, unfortunately. And then sometimes you get a lawyer, and the lawyer realizes that this is a police officer you're fighting, so you're fighting the state on two ends. They sometimes will drop your case. You have to have a very good lawyer. But for those who will go and get like a public defender, if they cannot afford a lawyer, those are the people that really suffer, because you get a public defender that works for the state and a police officer is a state representative. It's a sad story. There's a lady in Baltimore right now who has the same situation. And that lawyer told her she have had three lawyers now. And every lawyer she goes to, once they find her, they drop the case.
Yeah, because they don't want to take a position.
It's a sad situation. I really hope that your office would, because if you talk about crime victim, it covers those situations as well. I really hope that your office would look into this more and try to help, especially those who are less fortunate when it comes to the financial part.
Yeah, well, Bernice, thank you so much for sharing
with us.
Thank you,
Bernice.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Shannon, calling from D.C. Thanks for calling, Shannon. What's on your mind?
Hi, I am my son, my only son, Deion Smith, was murdered.
Mm-hmm.
September 13th. I had a detective. Tony Patterson was on my case. He retired and went on to the marshal's office. And I didn't hear from the new detective until I kept calling, trying to find out what's going on. Finally, when he did call me, I told him I know exactly where the gun is that killed my son. The young guy that killed my son was already incarcerated, so I went and told the judge that the boy that they have for a carjacking is the one who murdered my son. Again, the judge did hold him, but they're not holding him for murder. They're holding him for the carjacking. I don't know why they're still holding him, but I know it's not for my son's murder.
And when did this happen?
He has not got back in touch with me after I called him and told him I know where the gun is at to kill my son.
Well, Shannon, let me stop you there. When did you lose your son?
September 16.
Last year.
Yes, it's only been 6 months.
Okay.
7 months on the 13th.
Okay, Samende.
And what happens sometimes, they may not say anything to you, but through their investigation, they will probably tell you that they are holding him for another crime, because that's what he was arrested for. But they are doing an investigation, and there are certain things that they won't say to you because of your emotion. You might share it with someone, but I will say just hold up, because when you look at the investigative procedure, there are certain things that it just can't disclose. But if you have shared that with him and that you know where the gun is and that they are aware that he may be, but also remember that because you said he was the one that killed your son, they can't just believe that, they have to do an investigation. So I want to believe that right now they are going through an intensive investigation. It happened last year, and there are certain things they would not share with you because they don't want to open certain things about the case.
So essentially what you're saying is they got him.
Yeah.
He's not going anywhere.
Yes.
And that for the time being, until they can develop, you know, evidence.
Yes.
That they may not charge him, if they indeed believe that he is a suspect, the prime suspect or the like, but you're suggesting that it probably will happen.
It will happen. And sometimes while he's in jail,
mm-hmm.
they might probably send someone there. The investigation can even go as far as into the jail.
Mm-hmm.
So just trust. They're trying to find something, mm-hmm. and just trust that they are doing what they're supposed to do.
Talk to me a little bit about that, Ms. Roberts, because unfortunately, when we are victims of crime, patience goes out of the window. It is an emotional thing, and we want justice now.
And I totally agree with you. And that's something that we hear from crime victims, is that they sometimes don't get the information they need that would make them feel better about that something's actually taking place, either from the court system or from the law enforcement. And I think it's a dilemma that needs to be addressed.
Mm-hmm.
It's not an uncommon, sadly, it is not uncommon for us to hear victims who are frustrated about not getting the information they need about what's being done.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And before I let you go, as I said, Shannon, certainly we are crushed because of your loss. But the upside is that if indeed the person that you suspect is the person behind the death of your son, as I said, he's not going anywhere.
Yes.
And it's like,
y'all want to know where we at right now.
Yeah.
He has a little brother that's cutting himself. He's constantly asking for him. He have left two babies out here. The new baby was born last month.
Yeah.
We tried to put Dion's name on the birth certificate. They told us that we couldn't because Dion is deceased.
Yeah, Shannon, I've got to go. But patience, certainly, and we suspect that things will come out in your favor. Need to take a break. We'll be back. More conversation about victims' rights. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We are continuing our conversation about National Crime Victims' Rights Week. And we're asking, what happens to you if you've been a victim of crime? Of course, my guests are Marilyn Roberts, Acting Director of the Office for Victims of Crime. That is under the U.S. Department of Justice. And Seminde Lloyd, founder of the Women's Wing organization. And, of course, she has, like so many of us, also been a victim of crime. If you have a question or a comment, give us a call at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Ms. Roberts, for those who are coming out on the other side of a criminal incident, if they need other kinds of resources outside of the replacement of property and the like, emotional support, for example, or other kinds of services, what does your office do?
Again, my office provides funding to the states who mm-hmm. can provide services. So the states provide funding to over 4,000 agencies with the funding that comes from our office that are service providers. And it's all kinds of services. It's everything from hotlines to mental health services to medical services, shelter. It ranges, but it is up to the state to decide how they're going, what the needs are in their state and the services they're going to provide in the state. I will say that in the past 2 years, the states have gotten much more funding due to our appropriation being raised, and so they should be able to expand their services. And I'll also say that if people are struggling and trying to find services that they need in their communities, again, our website has service providers, a list of service providers throughout the country on it. So that's one possibility of a way to maybe get to the right place.
Mm-hmm. And to that end, Seminde, when someone, again, as I said, moves through this process after they've been a victim, what is it that they need to, for lack of a better term, help them feel better, to help them walk the street again, to feel safe in their own home?
Sometimes it's hard because some people develop anxiety, fear, don't want to be by themselves anymore. It varies. But I will say that most police officers, district now, police officers have these a list of resources. So if you call and say, oh, my son did this, or someone broke into my house, or I got raped, or it's domestic violence, there are different resources that it would give you, and it's up to you to reach out. Sometimes they will, even when the police officers leave, they will even call those places, give your number, and they will follow up with you. Things didn't used to be like that before, but now you do have the police officers more proactive when it comes to community services and resources. So it depends on the police officer that comes to your house. If he is aware of those services, he will, you know, let you know. But the feeling that one feel and the what that crime does to them varies, because, you know, for me, I got up and I brushed myself. I'm a community activist. I have so many people that I have to help. I'm at the jail. I'm in the community. I brushed myself off and I kept on going. But there's another person the same thing happened to, and now she afraid to be by herself. She doesn't open her door. She she has this anxiety. That didn't happen to me. That's what I said, that it's different. You know, it treat people differently.
Because one of our earlier callers, she was saying that even a couple of years after this incident with the police officer, she says she's still very sensitive about it.
Because she was crying.
Yeah, exactly. And so is counseling available?
Counseling is available. And then, you know, if you have family members who, you know, you have a good network, it depends on the communities you have around you, your church, your families.
But I mean, as it relates to your resources that the DOJ provides.
Yes, counseling is definitely available. And I will say, too, there are national hotlines, any number of them, that all link to each other. And they are very capable of giving some initial counseling for people and getting them put to the right places.
But sometimes because of the waiting list, people get frustrated. Because if something happened to you right now, you want to be seen right now. But because of the many crimes we have, people are put on the waiting list. That's why I said sometimes you reach out to your churches, you reach out to your community resources, and sometimes right there in your community, you may have it. Tell your neighbor, tell somebody. They might know of a resource right there than waiting for that hotline or the list or, you know, to be removed from that list.
Go ahead, Ms. Roberts.
I'm just
saying
that's a very good point.
What is, and I know you're in the capacity as acting director, but what is the genesis of the Office for Victims of Crime? I mean, how did the DOJ decide that something like this was necessary?
It actually is a result of the passage of the Victims of Crime Act, VOCA. And so the office was established as a result of that act being passed. And it was, I am really terrible about remembering dates.
That's okay.
But I think it was 1984 when the act was passed, and that established the office. And the office has sort of evolved over time. And but it has always been funded by the Crime Victims Fund, which is totally made up of fines and fees paid by big federal criminals, banks, those kinds of things.
Oh, you mean restitution?
Well, it's their fines that so
right,
when
right exactly.
Yeah, so when big companies, when you hear about the lawsuits with the big companies and they have to pay these fines, they go, if they're federal criminals, they go into the Crime Victims Fund. And so that's where all of our funding comes from, and it has increased over time.
Yeah, but I guess because we've seen more crooks, too.
it's not pretty big ones lately.
Yeah, it's not always the big criminals, because I was just in sentencing the other day where the judge had this inmate during sentencing to pay restitution. So you have inmates. They don't have to be like big time, but some of the judges will sentence them to prison and then they have to pay restitution. And I don't know whether the restitution go to your office or where.
That's different. It's only federal criminals who are being prosecuted by the federal government for fraud and that sort of thing that goes in. So
this is a marshal inmate, so it's federal.
But I think. But overall, when we're talking about the lion's share, because we're talking about millions of dollars.
Millions. The Crime Victims Fund has actually billions in it right now.
Really?
Billions with a B.
Well. With that said, and I know that you did say that this was, you know, the office has evolved, you know, over time with billions, you know, with a B. If you could put your wizard's hat on and look in your crystal ball, where do you think, what would be the best use of those resources going forward, considering how our crime victim situations have evolved?
Well, I think the thing that has happened recently with the increase, so what happens is each year when there's a federal budget, Congress makes a decision about how much of the fund is going to be accessed by our office. So in these past 2 years, and probably will happen again this year, the amount of funding that's gone to the states has quadrupled.
Wow.
And my answer to your question is expanded services. You know, we mentioned the need for more legal services. I think in rural areas, there's a need for more expanded services. There are groups of crime victims who've probably been underserved, people with disabilities, the LGBTQ community. So we really need to expand services to those who've kind of not been received what they may have needed.
Interesting. I'm low on time, but Simende, I'll let you have the last word, your thoughts about the aftermath for crime victims and what is best for them, those of course that do survive, obviously.
I think the counseling is pretty good, and then putting money aside, because especially like I said, your office really focus a lot on domestic violence issues, and to put programs to teach instead of giving them the money to get this, that is good to get the apartment, but first and last month deposit, but to also give them that life skills that they need. Because most of the women go back to those guys. And we are taking the women out of the home, but we are not educating these men how not to, you know, what domestic violence is, because some of them don't know what it is. That's what they saw their father doing. It's a learned behavior. So I think we need to put some money into organizations and groups that are teaching life skills. And so the women will benefit, the children will benefit, and these men will benefit as well. Not to say that men are the only one. And I'm glad that you mentioned the gay population, because right now there's a lot of crime when it comes to transgender. And so what do you all have in place for that population? We have a high rate of transgender violence, you know, going around.
A lot to take
Thank
in.
Thank you.
Yeah, a lot to take in. And certainly, Ms. Roberts, your office has its work cut out for it. But as you said, with billions worth of resources, let's hope that, you know, we can provide help for everyone. So, again, thank you so much.
You.
I appreciate you coming in, Simende. Always good to see you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Thursday, April 6th. I'm Harold Fisher. You can follow me on Twitter at HFisherWHUR or at DailyDrumWHUR. Now, stay tuned for The Connection with Lorna Newton. Good night.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, SiriusXM Channel 142,